Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. Politicians at the Republican and Democratic conventions once again professed their support and respect for those serving in the military, but veterans say they are tired of being used as political props. One of today's guests, veteran Michael McPherson, says he's tired of vets being used for war and then being discarded. In a piece for Common Dreams, he writes, quote, "Instead of thanking us, change how we are treated and work to end war. That is a real tribute. Do you know that an average of 22 veterans die by suicide every day? After we are injured in war, what happens when we come back home?" End quote. And that is what we are discussing on today's Your Call. There are more than 20 million veterans in the United States. 2.5 million have served in Iraq and Afghanistan. More than 90,000 have been deployed to a combat zone four or more times. Again, that's 90,000 veterans have been deployed to a combat zone four or more times. This is the largest number in modern history. Politicians love to call veterans heroes, but who's pushing for legislation that addresses serious issues like trauma, PTSD, violent behavior, and suicide? Michael McPherson is a veteran of the first Iraq War and executive director of Veterans for Peace. That's an organization that works to expose the true costs of war and heal the wounds of war. Michael is also a member of Military Families Speak Out, and he joins us on the line from St. Louis. Hi, Michael. Welcome to the show.
Hello. Thank you for having me.
It's great to have you. And we're joined by Perry O'Brien. Perry served as a medic in Afghanistan. In 2004, he was discharged as a conscientious objector. Perry is founder of the hashtag Vets Versus Hate. That is a movement of veterans denouncing racist comments by Donald Trump. Yesterday, they rallied in front of the Trump Tower in New York. Perry has been an active member of Iraq Vets Against the War, and he was a key organizer of Winter Soldier. And he joins us from the Argo Studios in New York. Hi, Perry. Welcome to the show.
Hi, Rose. Thanks so much for having me.
It's great to have both of you. So we're going to talk about Donald Trump's criticism of the parents of the Army Captain Humayun Khan. But I want to do that later in the show because that's getting so much attention right now. I first want to talk about what's not getting attention right now, and that is for so many years, the New York Times has done really good reporting, along with other media outlets, about what returning veterans are facing. Everything from PTSD to violent behavior to suicide to isolation. And I have to say, Michael, when I was doing some reading yesterday, I really couldn't tell the difference between an article written in, say, 2005 and an article written in 2016. I mean, what's really changed for veterans?
Yeah, that's a really good point. I don't want to say the Obama administration has done a lot of work in terms of helping homeless veterans, and the number of homeless veterans has gone down. And some cities are actually claiming that they've eliminated at least homeless veteran population, but of course their homeless population continues. So there has been some good change in that regard. And I had also saw some stats where the unemployment rate of veterans has gone down. So I think in those two areas there has been some positive change. But overall, yes, you're right. I mean, for example, the 22 veterans who die by suicide each day, that hasn't changed in a number of years. And you could say with that not having changed, I mean, that's obviously the ultimate thing that can happen to you is dying. That gives you a great indication or a bad indication how little has really changed.
And is that number, 22 vets are still committing suicide every day? That's happening right now?
As far as I know, I have not seen any reporting, and maybe Perry has. And let me say hello to Perry because we know each other and do quite a bit of work together. I haven't seen anything that has shown that has changed, and I would guess that if there was indication that it's changed, there would be great fanfare about it because that is obviously an incredibly high number. And people are very upset about it. But see, the problem is, I think, or at least one of the problems, is that having been at war for so long, you keep feeding into the system more and more people who face the same challenges as the people who have died by suicide before or who've been homeless before, et cetera. And it's intensifying, like you mentioned, about the number of people who have been deployed four or more times. So at some point, I'm sure the number will go down, I guess, but if we continue with the same foreign policy and putting the same pressures on the military and the veterans when they come home not being able to find the support that they haven't been able to find for decades, then it could actually go higher. I'm really not surprised, even though I'm greatly saddened that that number hasn't changed.
Perry, what are your thoughts on this? The Military Times reported just a couple of weeks ago that new data is out from the Department of Veterans, and they have found that 20 veterans are committing suicide every day nationwide.
Yeah, I think this is terrible and unfortunately predictable. It's one of the things that many of us who were protesting the lead up to the invasion of Iraq and then the continuing war were highlighting, that the policymakers and the advocates of this war didn't fully comprehend the long-term consequences, certainly not just the devastation and the enormous loss of life that would occur in Iraq, but for the young men and women that we were sending overseas, you know, the wounds that they would live with for the rest of their lives. And unfortunately, if, as we've seen, some of those lives have been cut short, not on the battlefield, but after returning home. And also want to say hello, Michael.
Mm-hmm. Well, and as Michael pointed out, homelessness is going down. In fact, ABC News reported on just yesterday that the Obama administration says the population of homeless veterans has been cut in half. Of course, that's very good news. Unemployment is down. Very good news. But what about the point that I brought up earlier, Perry, where I would read a New York Times story that was written this year, and it really didn't differ much from a story that was written 10 years ago about the trauma that veterans face when they get home, about the PTSD. And they're still, you know, they still need a lot of help. And this, it just, it seemed like not that much has changed. What are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I mean, I think those statistics represent, you know, what Michael mentioned, which is some folks in the Obama administration who have worked very hard to do their best to try to craft policy solutions and have in some cases been successful. I think the one of the biggest challenges we're seeing is that any discussion about caring for our country's veterans inevitably gets positioned in this ideological gridlock that we've seen intensify over the last several years, and we're certainly seeing in this campaign cycle.
Well, let's talk a little bit about what veterans need and the differences that we see between Republicans and Democrats. At the Republican convention, you heard people like Texas Governor, former Texas Governor Rick Perry, you know, talk about, I have the quote here, "Making America great again begins with taking care of our veterans." I mean, this was a theme throughout the entire Republican convention. And yet Politico had a story about Republicans 2 years ago derailing a sweeping $21 billion bill that would have expanded medical, educational, and other benefits for veterans. And we've seen this just over the years. U.S. Uncut reported that last year, Republicans in Congress blocked bills that would have enhanced services for vets, $1.4 billion for the Veteran Affairs funding bill. They blocked a 2012 Job Corps bill for veterans, a 2014 bill that would have expanded health care and education for veterans. So, Michael, what do Republican voting records tell us about where they stand on actually passing legislation that would address some of these issues?
Yes. I think that their voting record, it's the same as what generally has been the record of the country for quite some time when it comes to making sure that veterans, especially the most vulnerable ones who have post-traumatic stress or a physical ailment or some kind of a mental health challenge, that they really aren't interested in really helping and spending the resources to help us. But I think what's even more telling is that they seem to be, and this is Democrat and Republican, seem to be able to find funds to conduct war. They seem to be able to find funds to for weapon systems. It seems to be a bottomless pit of money available for those things. But when it comes to actually helping the human needs of the veterans, then all of a sudden, you know, we have to have this big debate, and we have to cut things or block things. I think it's just like the larger issue of human needs for all of us. Mm-hmm. You have the same thing. Plenty of money for war, few resources, or we have to have this long debate about helping people in general. So veterans fall into that.
And Perry, what would you add?
Yeah, I again agree with everything that Michael is saying. Unfortunately, the trend or the orientation of our government for as long as we've had a functioning government has been to overwhelmingly fund the military at war, to spend an enormous, really egregious, percentage of our federal budget on prosecuting these wars, and then never quite being able to scrounge up the money to actually care for the people who fought them, let alone all, the many other people impacted by these wars. Certainly not the people in the countries we've invaded, disrupted, and devastated, not military families, and not, average, everyday American working families who suffer as a result of lack of investment in infrastructure, in healthcare, in education, in all the other things that that contribute to the public good, where we just don't seem to find money for those things. And I agree with Michael that both parties have been at fault in that.
Yeah, I was going to ask you about that because, the reality is with some of these bills, it's the Republicans that definitely kill it. You have Bernie Sanders consistently introducing bills to support veterans. But President Obama's 2017 budget, military budget, would be $622 billion. That money would be set aside for the Pentagon, nuclear weapons. We're going to talk about nuclear weapons on tomorrow's show, and other items. So, Perry, is there a big difference between the Dems and Republicans when it comes to introducing legislation to providing the services that veterans need?
I think there's a significant difference. I think historically, Democrats certainly, have there's a fair share of blame towards the Democrats as well when it comes to not appropriately supporting veterans. However, I think certainly my generation of veterans has seen Democrats be much more effective and vocal champions for veterans. Particularly recently, the primary focus of the Republican Party, seems to be first trying to describe that our overwhelmingly well-funded military is somehow weak, despite the fact that we have the largest and most powerful military in the history of the world. That's obviously a key Trump talking point right now, and was a talking point of most of the other Republican candidates during the primary. And then the second thing that so many Republicans seem to be focused on right now is privatizing the VA, which clearly is not driven by concern for veterans, because the vast majority of veterans are opposed to that outcome. Even the more conservative-leaning veteran service organizations like the VFW and the Legion are opposed to that. But Republicans, for clearly ideological reasons, seem hell-bent on that, and that seems to be the focus of certainly the Republican Congress and Donald Trump.
And they're not saying the word privatize, right? They're saying that veterans should have choices, and that if they can't get into the VA, they should be able to go to a nearby clinic.
Right, which is, several years ago, there was a more aggressive push, even outright using the term privatize. And because there was such dramatic opposition to that, now we hear this choice rhetoric that's clearly, and it's unfortunate because I think, from a common sense perspective, any veteran who's dealt with the VA, regardless of their experience, would say, yes, if you're facing a totally untenable waiting times to get an appointment. If you're, far away from a VA facility, of course, it makes sense to have the option to go to a private healthcare provider. In fact, we've had that option, at least since I've had VA healthcare. In the case of an emergency, I can go to any emergency room in the country, no matter where I am. So that kind of choice already existed, and I think it's something that veterans would embrace. if not for the fact that it's so clear that this is a way to put, you know, a foot in the door towards privatization.
What has really changed at the VA? In 2014, there were so many headlines about veterans experiencing very long wait times and a major VA scandal. Michael, what has changed?
Honestly, I'm not sure what has changed there. I think it's spotty from facility to facility and from place to place. So I couldn't really answer that any better. But I do want to bring up that recently, and it's getting more exposure, I guess, lately, there is a plan that's been floated to close the VA facilities, the medical centers, and actually transition the 9 million veterans to private sector for health care. So there's a plan that has been floated. And in fact, here in St. Louis tomorrow, and I can't remember which union is planning a demonstration at the VA hospital here in St. Louis in support of the VA. So this idea of privatizing the complete Veterans Affairs medical centers or hospitals is out there, and people are pushing to make that happen.
Right, and there were some protests happening this week against the proposed phase-out of the VA. My connection is really slow right now, but I'll find out where that happened. But is this happening across the country where there might be closures of clinics?
Well, if the plan somehow were to move forward, now let's understand, as far as I can tell, it's not like an official thing, but if they are able to put that forward, the plan is to just get rid of all the medical centers and have them privatized. So the question about the Democrats and the Republicans, for me, the fact that we have these endless wars and we've had it under Democrats and Republicans, and the continued creation and pressure on veterans through these wars, to me means there's little support for the military and the veterans when it comes to really caring about us, because the foreign policy is a failure, but yet they keep throwing our bodies into this massive failure. On the other hand, though, there is, as Perry said, there's ideological differences about the federal budget. So the Republicans have this problem that they want to privatize everything, right? And they want the government to be as small as possible and to spend as little money as possible. So that conflicts with this idea of taking care of veterans. So this, I think, is where you have the divide within the two parties about how to approach that. I mean, the health care in itself, for everybody, you see that divide. But when it comes to whether or not they really care about us, I believe the foreign policy shows that they're willing to sacrifice as many people that it will take for them to gain whatever it is they're trying to gain, which obviously at this point, I would say the foreign policy is a failure, but maybe it isn't, because it depends on what they're trying to do. And if what they're saying they're trying to do is true, it's a failure. But there must be something else going on for them to continue this for so long.
Michael McPherson is a veteran of the first Iraq War and executive director of Veterans for Peace, an organization that works to expose the true costs of war. Perry O'Brien served as a medic in Afghanistan. In 2004, he was discharged as a conscientious objector. He is founder of the hashtag Vets Versus Hate, a movement of veterans denouncing racist comments by Donald Trump. Yesterday, they rallied in front of the Trump Tower in New York, and you did not see this or really hear about this during both conventions, but a large contingent of veterans were at the Republican and Democratic conventions calling for an end to endless war. And so today we are talking about veterans who are tired of being political props. They want politicians to actually implement legislation that would take care of them, that would increase budgets for the VA, for example, to deal with suicide, trauma, PTSD. And if you'd like to join us, we'd love to hear from you. If you're a veteran, what are your thoughts on these issues? If you're a family member of a veteran, what challenges have you faced in trying to get the veteran and your family the care that he or she needs, you can give us a call at 866-798-8255. And what are your thoughts about veterans used in the political debates, the conventions? What are your thoughts on that? 866-798-8255, 866-798-8255. You can also email feedback at yourcallradio.org, or you can tweet at yourcallradio. I'd love to get both of your comments on what happened at the Democratic Convention. When there were chants of no more war, when former CIA Director Leon Panetta spoke, Clinton delegates were instructed to shout USA. And so you had a lot of Bernie Sanders supporters chanting no more war, and then Clinton delegates were instructed to shout USA. There were a lot of flags being flown. A lot of Republicans tweeted that they couldn't believe what they were watching. They felt like the Democrats had become the party of patriotism. Perry, what were your thoughts on that?
Yeah, for me, it's complicated. I think on one hand, it's important for progressive forces to really, you know, to fight and to take back some of these symbols of service, of patriotism, of, you know, belief in a higher cause that really ever since Reagan, the right has been so effective at dominating. And, you know, it was kind of funny to see Republicans in sort of pale terror, just describing how the DNC had sort of hijacked their image, you know. And so, you know, I think that's important. And in fact, you know, and this is me speaking personally, not at all connected with Vets Versus Aid or other organizations. I was a Bernie supporter, and I think the Bernie campaign was incredibly effective at that, also of connecting a populist message to a deeply patriotic, you know, resonant and, you know, a message that sort of transcends, you know, individual interest and relates to much more communal shared values. That was very powerful. Now, of course, probably like most veterans who have served overseas, particularly during the Bush era, and saw a lot of flag waving and yellow ribbons slapped on the back of SUVs as justification for a totally unjustifiable war, you know, there's a great deal of concern when you see those sort of displays, particularly if they're connected to policies of endless war. Hmm. That's certainly a concern.
And Michael, what are your thoughts on that?
Well, I consider myself a patriot. And I think, like Mr. Khan said, that it's not an issue about whether or not, or it shouldn't be, whether or not you're a Republican, a Democrat, or whoever you are, whether or not you're a patriot, because patriotism is about loving your country, and I feel anyway, for me, making sure our country lives up to the values that it professes. As Perry said, that the shared values. The problem is that people want to use patriotism to make you blindly follow what the government says we should do, and not really look at things with a critical eye. But I believe the greatest patriots do look at things with a critical eye and don't follow blindly, because that's how you get led down roads that is not good for the country. It's only good for a small segment of the country, which is what's going on right now. Democrats or Republicans, because they want people to follow blindly, try to use patriotism to get us to do that. That's one of the reasons, I think it's a primary reason why people join, because they want to give back. It's one of the reasons I joined. And then they use us. They use that feeling, that emotion of patriotism to send us to war to do things that most of us do not want to do.
Michael McPherson is a veteran of the First Iraq War and executive director of Veterans for Peace. And Perry O'Brien is founder of the hashtag Vets Versus Hate, a movement of vets denouncing racist comments by Donald Trump. He served as a medic in Afghanistan and was discharged as a conscientious objector in 2004. There's so much talk right now in the news about veterans, but who's really talking about what happens after they come home? Who's giving a voice to the vets who say they are tired of being political props? This is Your Call, and we'll be back after this.
Your call is better when you get involved. If you have a question, idea, or experience to contribute to today's conversation, call 866-798-8255. That's 866-798-TALK, toll free. You can also send an email to feedback@yourcallradio.org. You may leave a comment at the show's website, set a bookmark for yourcallradio.org, or you can tweet us. Our Twitter handle is @yourcallradio. Coming up in a half an hour, BBC's World Have Your Say. They'll be talking about Rio and whether it's ready for the Olympics. Stay tuned.
This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Coming up tomorrow, we will discuss the Obama administration's $1 trillion plan to modernize the U.S. nuclear weapon arsenal. You might remember that in 2009, President Obama pledged to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons. So what explains this major policy shift, and why doesn't this get more attention? I mean, we're talking again about a $1 trillion plan to modernize the U.S. nuclear weapon arsenal. That is tomorrow. And if you have a show idea or a guest idea, you can drop us a line, feedback@yourcallradio.org. Today, we are talking about veterans who are tired of being used by both parties as political props. They are tired of being used for war and then being discarded. And it's been over a decade since the U.S. sent troops to Iraq and Afghanistan, and we're still talking about why they're not getting the care they need. Michael McPherson is a veteran of the first Iraq War and executive director of Veterans for Peace. Perry O'Brien served as a medic in Afghanistan in 2004. He was discharged as a conscientious objector. He is the founder of #VetsVersusHate, a movement of veterans denouncing racist comments by Donald Trump. So what are your thoughts on the foreign policy of the two parties and where they differ? Perry, we did a show about Hillary Clinton and her foreign policy plans 2 weeks ago. The New York Times had a very lengthy piece about Hillary, basically calling her a hawk, saying she is more hawkish than President Obama. She even has a lot of neocons behind her. Robert Kagan recently held a fundraiser for her.
Yeah, it's a great question. One thing I should probably clarify is that there's no singular founder of Vets Versus Hate. There are a whole group of us across the country, more of a spontaneous grassroots effort. Though I was definitely one of the core people involved in that from the beginning. And in terms of, you know, foreign policy, I should also clarify that while Vets Versus Hate is a thing that I've been working on, you know, we're not so focused on war and foreign policy. We're primarily focused on bigotry, on hate speech, and, you know, though certainly one of the consequences of that, of course, is war. And as we've seen, you know, anti-Muslim bigotry, Islamophobia has been used again and again to justify the, you know, wars in the Middle East and Central Asia and elsewhere. But in terms of the two candidates' foreign policy, I mean, I think there are a lot of reasons to be very seriously concerned about a continuation even of the neoliberal foreign policy of the Obama administration. And there are certainly reasons to believe that a Clinton presidency would only exacerbate some of those concerns. Me personally, I think what we might see under, you know, Donald Trump is a more catastrophic existential threat, really, to what's left of, you know, U.S. democracy, and I think would be apocalyptic at the risk of hyperbole for the U.S. military, and so I think of them on two different scales. Though again, certainly have concerns about the direction that things would take in a Clinton administration.
What about you, Michael?
Well, let me tell you something else before I answer the question. I just want your listeners to know that there's a report that Volunteers of America put out called Exploring the Economic and Employment Challenges Facing U.S. Veterans. And then they lay out a number of, there's like seven different things that they did surveys on. that talks about what the challenges veterans face, and I think it's pretty good and it's pretty short. So check out Volunteers of America's report. So I think that, let me see, U.S. foreign policy trajectory for maybe from its beginning, but certainly since the end of World War II, has been one to dominate the world, basically, economically and militarily. And then economics has also tried to dominate in the social aspects, you know, through movies and music and things of that nature. I think Hillary Clinton's policy will continue that trajectory. Maybe she's more of a war hawk than President Obama, maybe not, but that trajectory, Republican or Democrat, they just went at it in a different way. President Bush wanted to go at it alone, kind of like a cowboy thing. United States can do anything in the world. Democrats kind of always try to do things together with other nations, but at the end of the day, it's still about U.S. domination. With Trump, you don't know what you're going to get. He's very unconventional about all kinds of things, including foreign policy. So one of the things Veterans for Peace might agree with him on is that NATO is obsolete, but his reason, that we might agree with those words, but his reasoning for what that obsolete means are different. You know, so he's saying he'll talk to some of the foreign leaders that traditional Republicans and certainly Democrats would not want to talk to. So there's the possibility of a different kind of foreign policy under Trump administration, but at the same time, when he talks about waterboarding and doing things even worse and all those other things, you just don't know what you're really going to get. And one of the problems too is the way our system is, unless we really have a big turn, there's only so much retreat that you can really have unless you're really dedicated to retreating from this global domination, and I don't think Donald Trump is really dedicated to that. So the masses of people, we have to change U.S. foreign policy, because as of right now, the leaders of our country, I believe, are dedicated to a certain level of global domination. And you just see it being done in different ways, but the outcome remains the same.
Michael, what are you hearing from other veterans? You recently wrote a piece for the Bill Moyers website called Why Do Veterans Support Donald Trump?
Yeah. When you say, what am I hearing from other veterans about what?
About these issues, about endless war.
Oh. Well, you know, veterans, just like I think the rest of the population, have various ideas or thoughts about this. But all in all, I think the average vet, even if they're one who is real, I don't want to say right wing, I guess I want to say believes in a strong, which I believe in a strong U.S., but some people believe a strong U.S. means strong military, ready to kick people's butt at a moment's notice. I think most veterans don't want to see us go into war and want to see the country at some level of peace and left alone, you know, take care of your family, train, go to war when necessary only. But people have different ideas about what that means. Like I said in my piece, I think veterans have the same issues that everyone else has, but one of the things that's different is we're the ones, or the people on active duty are the ones that are actually fighting these wars. So as veterans or active duty people, I think people are looking for an answer, and I think the people who, first of all, veterans tend to, and military tend to, skew Republican in the first place. But they're looking for something new, and the system, meaning Hillary Clinton or an establishment Republican, I think many of the veterans who support Trump say, well, they're going to do the same thing, and we've seen failure over the past 15 years. We want to see success. So I think those people are supporting Trump because they don't believe that the system as it has been is good for them anymore. And I can understand them feeling that way. It's just that I think people like me and Perry don't believe that the direction that Trump necessarily wants to take the country is the right one, but I don't think we believe the one that Hillary wants to take the country is the right one either.
Hmm.
You know, so it's a real difficult, this is not to say who to vote for, this is talking about the issues. It's a real difficult situation to decide what to do.
And Perry, who are veterans today? I mean, what are the major differences between the young people who signed up with the military right after 9/11 and those who, say, signed up after 2010? Do we know?
Yeah, it's a great question. I think certainly there's a higher level of radicalization among, you know, folks who served and fought during the Bush era and saw just the really indescribable suffering of Iraqi and Afghan people and certainly suffering within the military community. Much of which we now know, and many of us suspected then, was based on absolute fraudulence and the most cynical and ugly, political agendas, political and ideological agendas. So, you know, I think for many veterans like myself who, you know, enlisted earlier, there's that awareness. But, you know, frankly, I think that's something that even the younger generation of vets, and man, I feel old saying that, I think many of them have inherited that as well. You know, I think some of the conservatism that's often ascribed to the veteran community is overstated. That, you know, there's very little in the way of scientific polling on this. There's a lot of unscientific surveys that happen. And, you know, one of the things, for instance, that almost never gets accounted for is that the majority, you know, the one demographic that right-wing and Republican forces have been able to hold on to is older white men. And older white men as a demographic are much more likely to be veterans than any other demographic.
Hmm.
So there's just a demographic statistical advantage that the right has in claiming veteran support. I think if you were to do scientific polls that waited for that, you would see a very, very different picture. I personally... The vast majority of veterans that I know are disgusted by Trump and terrified of the prospect of him being the next commander in chief and absolutely opposed to him. And the handful I know that plan on supporting him don't. When I talk to them, it's not about supporting him on his merits. It's because they like Hillary Clinton less. So again, I think much of that gets overstated.
That is Perry O'Brien. He served as a medic in Afghanistan, and he was discharged as a conscientious objector in 2004. Perry, we don't hear much about conscientious objectors anymore. I mean, we don't really hear that much about veterans unless we really search for articles. Can you talk about how you were discharged as a conscientious objector?
Sure. Well, after I got back from Afghanistan, I came back with a lot of questions. I was over there when we, during the lead up and invasion of Iraq, and from the beginning, was not persuaded that that was a remotely necessary war. It felt pretty obviously rushed. There was already, I think, a lot of information out there about the justification and the evidence for it being far from complete and likely fabricated, which we now know it was. But that really led me to ask a whole lot of other questions about, some of the things that Michael was raising about, the difference between strength and dominance, the difference between shared communal moral values and the aggressive, violent, jingoism that is cloaked under, patriotic stars and stripes. I came away after a long period of questioning feeling like I couldn't, any longer be a part of what the U.S. military was engaged in. And so decided to go through this process, which, admittedly, very few people every year go through. It's maybe 20 or 30, I think, get out every year maybe under CO status. Now, a lot of that has to do with misinformation about the process itself, and many veterans who, and you know, there's many people serving in the military who I think have these same strong convictions but just aren't aware that this process is even available to them or is remotely possible.
Do we know if people are still fleeing to Canada, for example?
My understanding is that it's less than it was, but but there's recently been some more news about them seeking asylum again under Trudeau and appealing to Trudeau for asylum. So I think it is still happening. I think you know, as our military exploits overseas have been downgraded or disguised, I think you know there's less of that, but. It certainly is still happening from what I know.
And why did you decide to join the military, Perry?
Well, I'm actually part of a very a small segment of folks who joined right before September 11th. I actually enlisted 2 weeks before 9/11. But, you know, just like as Michael said, you know, I wanted to be part of something larger than myself. You know, I wanted adventure, travel. You know, I certainly bought into this sort of, you know, this is how you prove yourself, that whole mythology. Just wanted to do something sort of radically different that I felt would help people. At the time, the most recent war in my memory was the war that Michael fought in. And it didn't seem at that particular moment like we were likely to be headed into another one. Though, you know, there was a part of me, I think, before I saw war up close, that even longed for that, or you know, wanted that, or hoped that I get the chance to serve overseas, because that's so much, you know, that's so embedded in the mythology.
And Michael, when did you join?
Well, I joined between my junior and senior year in high school. Actually, I'm from Federal, North Carolina. Fort Bragg is located, and it has a deep pride in the community because the 82nd Airborne is there. I have uncles, et cetera, who served, so I wanted to follow in their footsteps. So I went in the reserve between my junior and senior year of high school. That's between the year of 81 and 82. And I served in what people call the First Gulf War, but I want to point out that the U.S. had never stopped military operations in Iraq between then and now. I mean, we still have troops there. So if you really look at U.S. foreign policy, instead of maybe having a Chapter 1 or Chapter 2, First Gulf War, Second Gulf War, you know, current, whatever you want to call what we're doing now there, it's been one long war. We've been in Iraq at least since 1990, at least. It's kind of like a propaganda effort to get us to think of these things as broken up, right? But foreign policy-wise, the people of Iraq don't think of them as broken up, that we've been in their lives for 20-something years.
What are your thoughts on how the media give you attention or don't give you attention when you speak out? Because, I mean, so many veterans went to both conventions and protested outside. I watched nonstop coverage of the convention, never heard a word about it. Unless you really go on the social media pages of Veterans for Peace or Iraq Vets Against the War, you don't hear much about veterans speaking out on these issues. I was just thinking about the four whistleblowers who risked prosecution to warn about drones that kill civilians. They came out in November. And other than a few independent outlets, it didn't get that much attention. So, Michael, I mean, you've been doing this for a while. What are your thoughts on that?
Well, you know, unfortunately, and this is just the way that change is, if you're trying to go against popular narrative, if you're trying to change what in general society has accepted as the way to go, then you're not going to be paid as much attention to, even though the issue you're talking about warrants more attention, or actually you might have the answer to whatever the problem is. So you have to gain strength and pierce through the veil, and that's kind of just the reality of how things work. So I guess that just boils down to that the mainstream media, popular culture media, is following along with the narrative, and we certainly can't forget, and this is not new. I mean, this has pretty much been since there's been papers, I think, the people who own the papers have a particular agenda. They're moving forward that agenda, and they're either doing it consciously or unconsciously. We know that that was the case even in the West. The kind of stories that would come back east to support certain things that were happening in the West back in the 1800s. So it's not some kind of new thing. So I think that plays a role in what's happening. But lastly, I'll say, as you said, going to our website or seeing alternative media, that's kind of new in the history of media, that there's access that people wouldn't have had before. So we do have some opportunities. We just got to make sure we get that out to the people.
And Perry, what are your thoughts on that?
Yeah, I think Michael summed up well the challenges faced by any sort of group that's challenging the political status quo and the military entertainment complex, military entertainment media complex that exists. It's difficult to break through on that. I mean, for me, it's incredibly frustrating. Seeing so many pundits and news outlets, weighing in now and editorializing on the state of the military or talking about veterans, many of whom went wholesale for the war in Iraq. And, I personally feel like if people, if various pundits, op-ed writer, or columnists were being, had much integrity, they would still have, a little asterisks at the bottom of their columns that said, note to reader, I supported the war in Iraq, so I don't really know what the hell I'm talking about. But of course, those people are all still out there and have just sort of said, oops, we messed up on that.
Right.
So that's certainly frustrating. On the other hand, I think when a pure ideology of hate and aggression rears its head in the way that the Trump campaign has, when he tries to go to the left on foreign policy issues and say that he opposed the war in Iraq, absolutely untrue. And, I think Michael and I think who were probably both at most major, if not every major anti-war demonstration around Iraq during that period. I don't know about you, Michael, but I never remember seeing Donald Trump or hearing from him. It's just nakedly manipulative. But I think Trump has, for anti-war, for progressive forces, I think Trump is in some ways, represents on one hand an incredible existential threat that needs to be taken very seriously. And I think anyone who believes that Trump can't win is kidding themselves. And, those folks need to ask themselves, did they say the same thing about Trump winning the GOP primary? And if they did, then maybe they should reassess who they're listening to or, what they believe is possible in this political moment. But I think if we can seize this moment, on the other hand, we have the opportunity to be fighting against really the most fascist person that has sought higher office in this country in many generations, if not of all time, right? I mean, the guy is so far right-wing in his attitudes, so authoritarian, so xenophobic. And I think clearly based on his temperament, his personality, advocating just outright war crimes, targeting, civilians, torture, all of these things. I think we know very well what what foreign policy doctrine would look like under Donald Trump. I think there's a real opportunity, to build against Trump, to bring movements together against Trump. Sometimes people forget that, one of the greatest, most progressive eras emerged largely out of the fight against fascism in the 20s and 30s, and that the anti-fascist, anti-lynching popular front, which ended up producing the most progressive political era this country has ever seen. So I think we have that opportunity again, but I think it's incumbent upon us to unite, to take the threat seriously, and to fight with everything we have to make sure, first, that Trump isn't the next commander-in-chief, and second, that we're strong enough to keep pushing for progressive values after November.
And to also push for legislation that would provide veterans with the care that they need. Michael, final thoughts from you. What do you think needs to happen to get these issues back into the media? And what changes would you like to see?
So, first of all, I just want to be clear in terms of, you know, Trump or Hillary Clinton or whatever. You know, Veterans for Peace does not take any kind of stand. We're 501c3 on those issues. And we have people that run the spectrum of politics. So that's something we don't, you know, really get into. So I think that people have to continue to push for change. I think we have to realize that the reason that we have the rise of a Donald Trump, the reason that we have the Bernie phenomena is because of people are feeling economically insecure. And on the Donald Trump side, they're looking for scapegoats. And on the Bernie side, at least, they're looking for solutions. And I think recognize that the concentration of wealth that has taken place globally, actually, not just here in the U.S., has created this insecurity. I think that our leaders generally don't want to address that concentration of wealth in a real way. And I don't suspect that they will address it in a real way unless we push them to do that. And I think one of the things the Veterans for Peace is trying to do, and other progressive veterans, what we have to do is get out and talk to people face-to-face, one-on-one and in groups, and not really rely on the media to help get our word out. We have to have a movement from the bottom. The media will follow as we talk to more people, because they won't have any choice. But it's gonna take us getting out and talking to people, because you change people's minds by going through their heart, telling our stories about the things that we face, just like the Gold Star parents are out there talking right now and getting the kind of reaction they are. That's what we have to do, and I think we can make the difference that needs to be made.
Michael McPherson is a veteran of the first Iraq War and executive director of Veterans for Peace. Perry O'Brien is one of the founders of the hashtag Vets Versus Hate, a movement of veterans denouncing racist comments by Donald Trump. He served as a medic in Afghanistan and was discharged as a conscientious objector in 2004. Perry and Michael, thank you for joining us.
Thank you.
Thanks so much.
Thank you. And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call. On the next Your Call, we'll discuss the Obama administration's $1 trillion plan to modernize the U.S. nuclear weapon arsenal. The U.S. has 7,100 active and inactive nuclear warheads. In 2009, President Obama pledged to seek the peace and security of a world without nuclear weapons. So what explains this major policy shift? How serious is the threat of nuclear war today? And why doesn't this issue get more attention? It's Your Call with me, Rose Aguilar, and you. Support for Your Call comes from the listeners of KALW. To listen to past shows or sign up for our podcast, visit yourcallradio.org. Laura Flynn produces the show. Malihe Razazan is senior producer. Matt Martin is executive producer. And Rosalie Atkinson is our intern. Phil Hartman is our chief engineer, and Kevin Vance is our studio engineer. Our theme music is performed and composed by Live Human. You can email us at feedback@yourcallradio.org.